Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, January the 22nd, 2010. Well, it's been a week to assess the damage and regroup. We'll find out what looks different now that the dust is cleared from the USDA crop production report and what does not today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jim Heminger of Top Third. Our panelists in studio are Matt Bennett of TGM, or Total Grain Marketing, out of Windsor, Illinois, Corey Winstead of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Since the January crop production report, lead month corn and soybeans have both fallen, not quite, but about 60 cents. Matt Bennett, has the market properly pegged the damage ratio, or do there need to be some more readjustments made?
Well, seeing the way the market acted today, I have a hard time believing that we're done completely. It's tough to say. You know, the outside influences of the market are always going to have a pretty big effect this time of year. You know, we're entering into February here pretty soon where the crop insurance period is starting, and there's usually some fireworks that happen, and I would like to think that we would be able to get some footing, you know, before we enter February, but I don't feel confident that maybe we're quite there yet. And so I'm probably a little friendlier long term, but in the short term it's pretty tough to project.
Jackie Vakes?
Well, I think when you look at how many people are basically panicking over the drop that we've just had, we have to keep things in perspective. You know, if you look at a 60-cent drop on $4 corn versus a 60-cent drop on $2 corn, it's a significant difference. And so I think it's not a time to make emotional, panicky decisions and just dump grain and do those types of things.
Corey, you ready to be emotional?
Yeah. Well, I'm always emotional. But no, I think the market might find some support here. I mean, we've seen a dramatic drop in the grain prices. We've started to float around. I know in the December 10 contract, we've seen some support around that $4 level. We closed below that today, but you know, a lot of that I think had to do with the economy and the economic news we've had earlier this week with the basically it amounts to politics right now, I think.
You know, since probably December, I've on this program flipped and then flopped and then flipped and then flopped from bearish to friendly to even bullish. And so I'm wondering this week, after last week I had everybody thinking the market would rightfully go lower and the USDA report dead in front of them being bearish, can we stay that way this week? And they were bearish, both corn and soybeans.
You ask, are we staying bearish this week?
Yeah, I'm asking, which side of the coin are we on this week?
You know, I think you'll start to see some bullish attitudes out there. Maybe not, you know, I think long term I'm more bullish than I am bearish, but I think this week you might see some more buying come into play because we are at some good levels. You might have some fun buying come into the market, and with those, I mean, it's going to start to move the market higher.
Maybe I should ask, are you more just comfortable with the marketplace this week than last week?
Oh, I think definitely more comfortable with the marketplace. One of the things I like to watch are the calls. And when you look at calls have not been losing value the way you think they should be. with the type of move that we've had down in the market. It tells me we have some underlying buying going on. That's the first place people come in before they'll actually come into the futures. And so I think it's good. And I always follow the, you know, the dollar exchange rates between Japan and China. And so I'm friendly corn and beans definitely in the long run. Today, when we closed December, corn was 282 to Japan, 672 to China. Certainly supports continued buying in what we're looking at.
March corn this week had a high of $3.75 and a quarter. It's low at 362 and a half. Finished the week just 6 3/4 of a cent lower at $3.64 and 3/4. December contract at 397 and a quarter was down 8 3/4. By the way, just the last trade prior to the last settlement prior to the USDA report was at $4.22 and a half in that lead option month for corn. So you're feeling better about the corn market. Give me reasons fundamentally that it should that you should feel better about this corn market.
Well, yeah, I do feel better about the corn market. That's a tough question to ask. I think there's a lot of corn to come to market. I want to try to keep reminding people that the quality of the corn could become a huge issue as we move forward. You talk to anybody that manages a large co-op, and they'll tell you that. Also, whenever I look at it from the producer's perspective, you know, the way that the numbers shake out right now, I don't know that a guy that's got standing stocks is going to have a lot of incentive to go out there and work the ground four times and try to get the anhydrous put on. So I'm not so sure that we're going to be getting kind of acreage that even Informa came out with today. I don't necessarily agree with it. So I think that lends some support to it long term, because if we don't get good acreage with the high usage that we've built into this corn market, you know, we could be looking at a pretty nice little market for the December option, and so that would tend to maybe lend some support maybe to the nearby as well.
And those Informa numbers, by the way, for corn acres, as they were released on a Friday afternoon or Friday, at 89.647 million acres for the 2010 crop year, that's up 3.165 million acres. You shook your head in agreement that you didn't think farmers would bother to put that many acres in.
Yeah, you know, it's just interesting how this works. I mean, if you talk to analysts, they say we need 89 to 90 million to meet demand, acres planted to meet demand. And so this number comes roughly in the middle. I have a hard time thinking that producers are all – I mean, I realize we live in Illinois here, and we're a corn country, and we'll put the corn in. But, you know, there's a lot of – there were a lot of bad yields, corn on corn this year. So guys are going to start thinking, maybe I'll plant some beans. And if the corn price does continue to go down, where is that incentive to put more corn in the fields?
Well, do you have any idea? What would be an incentive? I take it you don't think there are incentives or many incentives to put corn in.
Not at prices this low. I mean, I think we have to have a good rally in corn prices in order to get that.
Well, I think when you look at the U of I information that came out and said break even on average last year at 60 bushels of bean, 175 bushels of corn, it was 401 for corn was break even. And so I think that when you look at the prices that we're sitting at, there isn't a lot of incentive. I wrote a program that compares the difference. It costs $192 an acre, according to U of I, to plant corn versus planting beans. At 60 bushel beans on average and 175 bushels of corn, right now beans have about a $50 an acre advantage. So guys are going to be looking at that. I think it's unprecedented what we're doing in the United States this year in the ag market, because we're coming into a spring where we have so much opportunity to change acres and make choices based on price, where we don't when we have all the anhydrous and all the, you know, all the field work done.
Matt, on Bennett Farms, when did you finish up shucking corn?
2 days before Thanksgiving.
And did you get very much tillage done?
We had tillage going right behind the combine. I'd say we were probably, you know, very fortunate in that category. To answer your question, what's the incentive to plant corn? One thing that I would say, because I agree with both these guys wholeheartedly, but let's keep in mind, if we would keep corn right where it is right now, our insurance price would maybe be a nickel less than what it was last year with significantly lower input costs. So there's your incentive. But that's assuming all things are equal. And let's not forget, you've got significant problems with guys being able to get out and work ground this year, you know, and they have standing stalks, they have ruts in the field, the ground saturated throughout the Midwest. I have got to ask myself, how many trips are going to take me to get across the field? Plus, when I talk to my ag chem suppliers and they say logistically, we don't know that we can get the anhydrous to the field in the quantities that we need to because so little was applied last fall. So therefore, yeah, your incentive is that looking at the insurance price, if it stays, you know, the same, you've got a better situation than last year. But again, that's assuming all things are equal, and this certainly is not an all things equal year.
Okay, so on the other side of that coin, we watched Iowa, and the Iowa statisticians report fertilizer, and they have for several years now. Other states do not. We watched them be 3 weeks behind in fertilizer applications going into the spring last year. Now, they had a very good spring. They were planted very early, and it didn't take long for their fertilizer numbers to go from 3 weeks behind to 2 weeks ahead, and they jumped quickly. So I don't know. I'm wondering whether you're right on the idea that they will have a short supply of anhydrous to get in.
Okay.
And then I want to go back to your other question, the final question that I started with you. How much tillage did you get done, and then are you beans or more corn acres going in?
As you know, I've been heavy corn for several years in a row, and I've probably been 70-80%. And this year, on ground that I've got standing stalks, which is just one farm, we're certainly going to beans. I sold them, you know, about a month ago, and I said, you know, this is where I'm at. You know, I've got a heck of a nice little profit built into this thing, and I'm not worried about, you know, if I go in and rip it, Todd, and then it turns off dry. What do I have? You know, I might lose my moisture. I might not have ground that'll work worth a darn. And then I've got to figure out a way to get anhydrous on it. The reason why I say they're talking about maybe a shortage is that some of your ag chem suppliers are telling producers, let's think about alternative sources of nitrogen, whether it be urea or 28, because they don't feel that they have the ability to get the anhydrous ammonia in the capacity that it needs to be.
No, I want you to come back in with me because you have more access to people who talk about the ability to move anhydrous nitrogen, all forms of nitrogen around. What do you hear from with inside Growmark?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not in the fertilizer side, so
I understand.
I don't want to, you know, I'm not, I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I think I tend to agree with Matt. I think you will start to see some issues, and there could be some shortages, but again, Todd, I don't want to speak on that. I won't put you anymore on the spot. That's not fair.
You're right. It's not fair.
Well, I think when you look at it logistically too, and the anhydrous comes up and is railed in and all those types of things, it's not easy to turn it over. But I think the other thing, even if we get 89 million acres planted, we have to deal with compaction on top of it. And so I think ultimately that's going to have an impact at the end due to yield.
Okay, Corey, you came in probably today with one idea that you wanted to make sure that we talked about on Commodity Week. What is it?
Well, mine's on beans.
It's time to switch.
Yeah, okay. I think there's a lot of opportunity in beans, and I'm pretty bullish on beans. And some of the reasons why, I think, you know, everybody again talks about that South American crop and how strong it's going to be. We've had some wet conditions in Brazil right now, which is starting to slow down harvest. Argentina is starting to get a little bit more drier. Now, they've had some, you know, good yields in that area so far on the early harvested stuff, but at the same time, Argentina came back late last year, had some weather problems towards the end of February, and they came back real low on their numbers compared to what they were estimating. And we're already starting to see some signs of potential problems there, and I think it's going to become a pretty big issue.
So you're feeling good corn and beans.
I'm feeling pretty good corn and beans. I'm feeling even better beans just because also the exports are very, very strong in beans. We're 61% shipped on our beans. That's shipped, and we're 91% committed, sold on our beans right now. Yeah. Now, I realize some of that might be China. They might back out on those. But at the same time, 61%, we're chewing through our beans pretty heavily.
All right. The bean market this week, by the way, had a high of $9.84 in the March, a low at $9.40 3/4. Settlement price down 22.5 cents at $9.51 1/2. November beans at $9.33 1/4. We're down 9. China's been in the marketplace. They've said, we will buy, we will store. Do you agree? Do you think beans have potential?
Oh, definitely. I'm bullish beans. I mean, I'm friendly corn and bullish beans, and I think you have to be. When you look at the, you know, the South American carryout is gigantic. There's no question about it. Probably 700 million bushels. It's all about logistics. And when you continue to see China buy from us out of the Pacific Northwest, it tells you that there is a price advantage to them for doing that. And I don't see that changing quickly, even if the American dollar goes back up to 82.
Do I have a dissenting vote?
Yeah, I'm not going to agree just for the sake of agreeing on this. And I think that they both make very good points. But from my perspective, whenever I see how big of a crop we do have coming, I think that there are going to be beans that move. Generally speaking, the export market backs off a fair amount after we get into the February time frame. And I don't think that you'll see near as robust demand. China, unfortunately, in the past, you know, has shown us that there are times whenever they book exports and they don't take them. So in my opinion, yeah, he's right. We're 91%, 61 or 62%, but bottom line is, show me the money. Show me that you are going to go ahead and take all of them before I get too awfully excited about it this year.
You've been listening to Commodity Week, at least the first half. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. We'll return when we'll talk with Jim Heminger. He's with Top Third in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio, Jackie Vakes, Matt Bennett, and Corey Winstead.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was a pretty dreary week across Illinois, with persistent low clouds, drizzle and freezing drizzle, and cold temperatures. Temperatures actually averaged above normal this week, but remained generally in the 30s. The daily swing in temperature from maximum to minimum was small, amounting only to a few degrees. High temperatures were close to normal much of the week, but the persistent cloudiness kept overnight lows well above normal. Precipitation was below normal this week, despite the continuous dampness in the air. Freezing drizzle over the course of several days caused hazardous travel in the northern half of Illinois. Scattered freezing rain spread across central and northern Illinois on Wednesday, and the week ended with damp, chilly weather. A storm spinning up over the central plains will bring more rain to Illinois this weekend, followed by colder weather that will likely persist through most of next week. Some light snow or flurries are possible Monday and Tuesday as the cold air spreads through Illinois. Another round of precipitation is possible Thursday, with rain likely south and snow possible in central and northern Illinois. Colder weather should follow this system into next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, January the 22nd, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason, our panelist in studio, Corey Winstead of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of TGM, or Total Grain Marketing, from Windsor, Illinois. Our panelist, our studio guest actually today, is Jim Heminger. He attended Cornell University, majoring in agribusiness and economics. He has over 30 years' experience at the Board of Trade, where he started his career as a floor broker and a market analyst for an international grain company, and then he spent over 25 years as a trader and a broker. He joined the Top Third team in the middle of 2007. He serves as their senior risk advisor. Jim, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Please tell me how I, as a new client at Top Third, would be brought up to marketing speed. That is, what is the first thing you might teach me to do? Or maybe the first bad habit that I probably have, you'd break me of.
Well, one thing that we always try to do is our marketing approach is never to put clients in the marginal positions. That may work in some years, but it's been our experience that over a period of time, Producers, for the most part, don't handle marginal positions well when they start going against them. So what we try to do is find out the specifics of each customer's operation, apply our recommendations to his specific situation, give him good timely cash sale recommendations, and then protect price levels with using some type of margin-free option strategies. Now, you have to pay for those options up front, but we do that in a way that the client would know up front exactly what the risk is he's protecting, what the cost is going to be, so there's no surprises later. And in the last 3 or 4 years, when we've seen these markets have major market moves that no one predicted, we think this is the best way to approach management strategy, and to do it in a way that we're trying to manage the risk more than we are trying to manage the price levels that we're at or try to second-guess the market. I've been in this business a very long time. I've known a lot of good traders, a few good market analysts. No one in the last 3 years has done a good job of predicting where these prices are going. So we really focus on managing the risk of what these markets might do, so we're always in a position to take advantage of good cash marketing opportunities when they come about, and you never know when that's going to happen. We can look at just even last year. No one foresaw the wet weather issues creating the over a dollar bushel rally in corn in the spring, and then certainly no one saw the market looking for a $1.20 rally during harvest because of more weather issues.
Yeah, Jim, it's Matt Bennett here. I'm just with what we're talking about in the studio, we're talking a little bit about, you know, what we see on out in the future, maybe not next week only, but whenever you talk to the producers and the people you know in the industry, given this year and given the challenges that we have going into this year, not just looking at price, how do you feel we're going to shake out on potential acreage, and what do you think that that's going to do for us price-wise here between, you know, now maybe in the acreage report?
One thing I think analysts, particularly grain analysts, have a difficult time realizing is the tremendous influence that the outside investment money has on all the commodities, just not agricultural commodities, but all the commodities across the board, the energy commodities, the precious metals commodities, and the influence they have. Are they willing to stay at a level and keep buying with the idea that they might eventually get a profit out of that? Or are they getting into a position where they're starting to panic with their positions and start to move on that? And I think that has a much bigger effect on agricultural prices and grain prices in their intermediate term, definitely not the long term, but the intermediate term, more than analysts and producers realize. And a lot of people like going through and crunching the numbers about, well, if we have this size of production, this amount of demand, this amount of supply, we should be at this price. I think that school of thinking pretty much is gone out the window with the way we've seen these markets operate the last 3 years. Now, answering your question about what are we looking forward to on acreage, that is really difficult to assess, and I don't think anyone knows. We can just look at last year as an example. The end of March, the USDA gave us prospective planting numbers in corn, then it ended up being totally off base by the time those actual numbers came out the end of June. So going forward, I think it's just difficult to assess, well, are producers going to do this? And as you stated earlier in your program, you know, a lot of that depends on weather. A lot of that depends on price. And it's very, very difficult to assess going forward. You know, we could sit here and crunch the numbers and try to figure out what these scenarios might happen, but we really focus on trying to manage the risk. I'm not trying to talk around the question, but a problem I see with the markets right now is the last 6 months of last year, the investment community was very bearish on the U.S. dollar. They are heavily short dollars. And because they were bearish on the dollar, they got long commodities across the board, energies, precious metals, gold made new historic highs. They purchased a lot of grain contracts. They've backed off from that scenario. They're trapped in the short dollar contracts they have. The USDA numbers a week and a half ago trapped them in the grain markets. They've really pulled back on showing an interest in purchasing grain contracts, particularly corn. They were very bullish on corn. They've backed away from that scenario. I'm a little concerned without them being willing to stand and buy commodities at this point, and with the long positions they still have, that we have the potential to ratchet down for at least three or four more weeks in these grain markets. Now, the one thing issue in corn that could have an effect eventually, there's a lot of on-farm storage of corn that's going to be out of condition that needs to move here in the next couple of months. That initially could be bearish. It may have an effect more on cash basis than it does futures basis. But once that corn moves, the need for good quality corn could help firm that market up in the spring. And then we're going to be trying to figure out what the actual acres are that's being planted, and then we'll get into the weather markets.
Jim, this is Corey Winstead with AgriAdvisor. One question I have for you is, with you working with producers and talking to them, what are you recommending, one, to do with that old crop with all the issues, the potential issues that could be with storage and conditions? I mean, what are you recommending them to do? What kind of strategies? And then also on your new crop, as you talk to them, what percentage do you think they should be sold before harvest?
Jim, well, I need you to be really pretty concise on this. We're running out of time.
Okay. We actually, the first week in January, put out major recommendations to be heavily sold before the USDA numbers. And one of the reasons was, as we did talk to our clients across the country, we started having clients tell us that their yields were 20 and 30 and 40 bushel above their APH, their historical averages. And we saw this large number coming from the USDA. So we were very aggressive with our cash sales recommendations, and then also putting floors under the market to protect the downside. Hopefully, you know, our clients took that advice and they don't have those issues about marketing now. That probably we're at a point with corn that if we ratchet down a little bit more, it'd probably be worth trying to ride out maybe another 20, 25 cents down in corn to see if we do get some type of spring weather rally.
Jim, we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
You're welcome.
Jim Himinger is with Top Third out of Chicago, Illinois. It is time for a final word or two from our panelists in studio this afternoon. Matt Bennett is with TGM. Matt?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting discussion today. We don't all agree on everything, but we all kind of feel like it's not nearly as bad as what it was before, so keep your head up.
And Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson?
Couldn't agree with them more. I think it's right now is not a time to panic. It's a time to have a strategy.
And Corey Winstead of AgriAdvisor.
Yeah, strategy is so important in times like this. And I think as you go through, find profitable levels, be disciplined in your selling.
And that wraps up this January 22nd edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio today have been Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Corey Winstead of AgriAdvisor LLC in Bloomington, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line, Jim Himinger of Top Third in Chicago. A couple of things to keep in mind as we move through the next week. You can always listen to this program, other agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media, anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all our daily ag programming in its entirety. You can listen to it directly from the website or have it delivered to your computer automatically as a podcast. It's all at willag.org, along with a way to subscribe to our weekend newsletter. It's free. Just subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page. If you don't like it, come back and hit unsubscribe. It's all that easy at willag.org. You have a great week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333 and by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.